Welcome to New World Newts, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, the second half of Harold Pinter's stunning 2005 speech. It's on truth, lies, and war. And the United States government does get mentioned here and there. I hope you'll stay tuned. This week, we continue with more of the fine Nobel Prize acceptance speech of the fine English playwright, Harold Pinter. It's the 10th anniversary of the speech, more or less, given in December 2005, and it's the 85th anniversary of Pinter's birth on October 10, 1930, in Hackney, London County, UK. He died in 2008. Pinter titled his Nobel acceptance speech, Art, Truth, and Politics. Last week, in the first part, Pinter contrasted the world of dramatic art with the world of public affairs. In art, truth is slippery, uncertain, unknowable. Maybe it doesn't even exist. But in the real world, for practical purposes, truth does exist. Truth is knowable. But governments don't admit the truth of what their own foreign policies actually are. Governments don't admit the truth of the murder and plunder they commit abroad in order to enrich business interests at home. The citizens don't know the truth because the government has woven what Pinter memorably calls a vast tapestry of lies. If citizens knew the truth of the bloodshed and devastation the government is creating abroad, they would be appalled. They would compel change. Governments act like bandits routinely. But last week, Pinter called out the worst offender, as he sees it, the government of the United States. He focused on two examples, the U.S. invasion of Iraq from 2003 and the bloody campaign to overthrow the reformist democratic government of Nicaragua in the 1980s. This week, he takes on official hypocrisy, the illegal imprisonments at Guantanamo, nuclear weapons insanity, and what dropping bombs on civilians is actually like, seen from the ground. Let's return to Harold Pinter.
The United States no longer bothers about low-intensity conflict. It no longer sees any point in being reticent or even devious. It puts its cards on the table without fear or favor. It quite simply doesn't give a damn about the United Nations, international law, or critical dissent, which it regards as impotent and irrelevant. It also has its own bleating little lamb tagging behind it on a lead, the pathetic and supine Great Britain. What has happened to our moral sensibility? Did we ever have any? What do these words mean? Do they refer to a term very rarely employed these days? Conscience? A conscience to do not only with our own acts, but to do with our shared responsibility in the acts of others. Is all this dead? Look at Guantanamo Bay. Hundreds of people detained without charge for over 3 years, with no legal representation or due process, technically detained forever. This totally illegitimate structure is maintained in defiance of the Geneva Convention. It is not only tolerated, but hardly thought about by what's called the international community. This criminal outrage is being committed by a country which declares itself to be the leader of the free world. Do we think about the inhabitants of Guantanamo Bay? What does the media say about them? They pop up occasionally, a small item on page 6. They have been consigned to a no man's land, from which indeed they may never return. At present, many are on hunger strike, being force-fed, including British residents. No niceties in these force-feeding procedures. No sedative or anaesthetic. Just a tube stuck up your nose and into your throat. You vomit blood. This is torture. What has the British Foreign Secretary said about this? Nothing. What has the British Prime Minister said about this? Nothing. Why not? Because the United States has said to criticize our conduct in Guantanamo Bay constitutes an unfriendly act. You're either with us or against us. So Blair shuts up. The invasion of Iraq was a bandit act, an act of blatant state terrorism, demonstrating absolute contempt for the concept of international law. The invasion was an arbitrary military action, inspired by a series of lies upon lies and gross manipulation of the media and therefore of the public. An act intended to consolidate American military and economic control of the Middle East, masquerading as a last resort, all other justifications having failed to justify themselves as liberation. A formidable assertion of military force responsible for the death and mutilation of thousands and thousands of innocent people. We have brought torture, cluster bombs, depleted uranium, innumerable acts of random murder, misery, degradation and death to the Iraqi people, and call it bringing freedom and democracy to the Middle East. How many people do you have to kill before you qualify to be described as a mass murderer and a war criminal? 100,000. More than enough, I would have thought. Therefore, it is just that Bush and Blair be arraigned before the International Criminal Court of Justice. But Bush has been clever. He has not ratified the International Criminal Court of Justice. Therefore, if any American soldier, or for that matter politician, finds himself in the dock, Bush is warned that he will send in the Marines. But Tony Blair has ratified the court and is therefore available for prosecution. We can let the court have his address if they're interested. It is number 10 Downing Street, London. Death in this context is irrelevant. Both Bush and Blair place death well away on the back burner. At least 100,000 Iraqis were killed by American bombs and missiles before the Iraq insurgency began. These people are of no moment. Their deaths don't exist. They are blank. They're not even recorded as being dead. "We don't do body counts," said the American general, Tommy Franks. Early in the invasion, there was a photograph published on the front page of British newspapers of Tony Blair kissing the cheek of a little Iraqi boy. "A grateful child," said the caption. A few days later, there was a story and photograph on an inside page of another four-year-old boy with no arms. His family had been blown up by a missile. He was the only survivor. "When do I get my arms back?" he asked. This story was never referred to again. Well, Tony Blair wasn't holding him in his arms, nor the body of any other mutilated child, nor the body of any bloody corpse. Blood is dirty. It dirties your shirt and tie when you're making a sincere speech on television. The 2,000 American dead are an embarrassment. They are transported to their graves in the dark. Funerals are unobtrusive, out of harm's way. The mutilated rot in their beds, some for the rest of their lives. So the dead and the mutilated both rot in different kinds of graves. Here is an extract from a poem by Pablo Neruda. I'm explaining a few things. And one morning, all that was burning. One morning, the bonfires leapt out of the earth, devouring human beings. And from then on, fire, gunpowder from then on, and from then on, blood. Bandits with planes and moors, bandits with finger rings and duchesses, bandits with black friars spattering blessings came through the sky to kill children. And the blood of children ran through the streets without fuss, like children's blood. Jackals that the jackals would despise, stones that the dry thistle would bite on and spit out, vipers that the vipers would abominate. Face to face with you, I have seen the blood of Spain tower like a tide to drown you in one wave of pride and knives. Traitorous generals, see my dead house. Look at broken Spain. From every house, burning metal flows instead of flowers. From every socket of Spain, Spain emerges, and from every dead child, a rifle with eyes. And from every crime, bullets are born, which will one day find the bullseye of your hearts. And you will ask, why doesn't his poetry speak of dreams and leaves and the great volcanoes of his native land? Come and see the blood in the streets. Come and see the blood in the streets. Come and see the blood in the streets. Let me make it quite clear that in quoting from Neruda's poem, I am in no way comparing Republican Spain to Saddam Hussein's Iraq. I quote Neruda because nowhere in contemporary poetry have I read such a powerful, visceral description of the bombing of civilians. I have said earlier that the United States is now totally frank about putting its cards on the table. That is the case. Its official declared policy is now defined as full-spectrum dominance. That is not my term. It is theirs. Full-spectrum dominance means control of land, sea, air and space, and all attendant resources. The United States now occupies 702 military installations throughout the world in 132 countries, with the honorable exception of Sweden, of course. We don't quite know how they got there, but they are there, all right. The United States possesses 8,000 active and operational nuclear warheads. 2,000 are on hair trigger alert, ready to be launched with 15 minutes warning. It is developing new systems of nuclear force known as bunker busters. The British, ever cooperative, are intending to replace their own nuclear missile, Trident. Who, I wonder, are they aiming at? Osama bin Laden? You? Me? Joe Doakes? China? Paris? Who knows? What we do know is that this infantile insanity, the possession and threatened use of nuclear weapons, is at the heart of present American political philosophy. We must remind ourselves that the United States is on a permanent military footing and shows no sign of relaxing it. Many thousands, if not millions of people in the United States itself are demonstrably sickened, shamed, and angered by their government's actions. But as things stand, they are not a coherent political force yet. But the anxiety, uncertainty, and fear, which we can see growing daily in the United States, is unlikely to diminish. I know that President Bush has many extremely competent speechwriters, but I would like to volunteer for the job myself. I propose the following short address, which he can make on television to the nation. I see him grave, hair carefully combed, serious, winning, sincere, often beguiling, sometimes employing a wry smile, curiously attractive, a man's man. God is good. God is great. God is good. My God is good. Bin Laden's God is bad. His is a bad God. Saddam's God was bad, except he didn't have one. He was a barbarian. We are not barbarians. We don't chop people's heads off. We believe in freedom. So does God. I am not a barbarian. I am the democratically elected leader of a freedom-loving democracy. We are a compassionate society. We give compassionate electrocution and compassionate lethal injection. We are a great nation. I am not a dictator. He is. I am not a barbarian. He is. They all are. I possess moral authority. You see this fist? This is my moral authority. And don't you forget it. A writer's life is a highly vulnerable, almost naked activity. We don't have to weep about that. The writer makes his choice and is stuck with it. But it is true to say that you are open to all the winds. Some of them I see indeed. You are out on your own, out on a limb. You find no shelter, no protection, unless you lie. In which case, of course, you have constructed your own protection and, it could be argued, become a politician. I have referred to death quite a few times in this speech. I shall now quote a poem of my own called Death. Where was the dead body found? Who found the dead body? Was the dead body dead when found? How was the dead body found? Who was the dead body? Who was the father or daughter or brother or uncle or sister or mother or son of the dead and abandoned body? Was the body dead when abandoned? Was the body abandoned? By whom had it been abandoned? Was the dead body naked or dressed for a journey? What made you declare the dead body dead? Did you declare the dead body dead? How well did you know the dead body? How did you know the dead body was dead? Did you wash the dead body? Did you close both its eyes? Did you bury the body? Did you leave it abandoned? Did you kiss the dead body? When we look into a mirror, we think the image that confronts us is accurate. But move a millimeter, and the image changes. We are actually looking at an ever-ending range of reflections. But sometimes a writer has to smash the mirror, for it is on the other side of that mirror that the truth stares at us. I believe that despite the enormous odds which exist, unflinching, unswerving, fierce intellectual determination as citizens to define the real truth of our lives and our societies is a crucial obligation which devolves upon us all. It is, in fact, mandatory. If such a determination is not embodied in our political vision, we have no hope of restoring what is so nearly lost to us, the dignity of man.
That was the late British playwright Harold Pinter with his stunning Nobel Prize acceptance speech of 2005. He was one of the most important playwrights writing in English in the second half of the 20th century. His honors included the Nobel Prize for Literature and, from France, the Legion of Honor. He died in 2008. I made a mistake last week talking about Prime Minister Tony Blair's British honors and Pinter's lack of British honors. He never became Sir Harold Pinter, I said, and that was correct. But in fact, Pinter had been offered a knighthood in 2009, and he declined. After resigning as Prime Minister in 2007, Tony Blair was offered not a mere knighthood, but a higher honor, a life peerage, a barony. But it turns out that Blair, too, declined the honor. So, while there was never Sir Harold Pinter, at least there is no Sir Tony Blair either. Thank God for small favors, and I apologize for getting the story not quite right last week. Anyway, we do have Sir Paul McCartney, Sir George Harrison, and Sir Richard Starkey, known to the commoners as Ringo. But I digress.
Union Carbide, they go by so many names, but for the land and the people destroyed by their greed, the story is always the same. McDonald's requires McDonnell Douglas, United Fruit needed U.S. Marines, the freedom of their market, supported by fascist regimes, the invisible hand, the market is only one of two, wielded by the corporate elite and dressed in red, white, and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other one surely tell us we're free, and we've got to cut right through their lies. It's not freedom to choose our own destinies, it's freedom to choose our demise. You can die for their money, you can die by their guns, they'll let you choose your own fate. If you get in the way of their profit, you can be sure you'll be burned. The invisible hand of the market red and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one a $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other one surely will.
They opened fire on the people, and these were true.
People say, "Wow, I'm gonna share the shit you want to
share." This is CBC Radio.
The massacre of 100
We don't need no great hand coming down from the sky, or your soldiers in olive drab marching on by. To discipline, regulate, liberalize, legislate, we decline. Without you, we were just doing fine. The invisible hand of the market is only one of two, wielded by and dressed in red, white, and blue. In one fist an M16 rifle, in the other one a $1,000 bill. If the right fist doesn't get you, then the other...
That was Ethan Miller and Kate Boverman from their Invisible Hand. They remind us of a point that Harold Pinter mentions, but does not elaborate on. Governments commit military aggression and atrocities abroad, not for their national glory, and certainly not to protect their own citizens. As Michael Parenti nicely put it, the goal of U.S. foreign policy is to make the world safe for the Fortune 500. Or, as Kate Boverman sang, McDonald's needs McDonnell Douglas, United Fruit needs the U.S. Marines. The latter refers to the U.S.-led overthrow of the democratic government of Guatemala in the 1950s and its replacement with a military dictatorship, done to protect the profits of the United Fruit Company, now Chiquita Brands. But time is late, so don't get me started. Chaz K. kindly sent me the song you just heard, and you kindly listened to our show. And the University of Hartford kindly holds the license to and helps support the show's home station, WWUH-FM, in the West Hartford section of Darkest Connecticut. Harold Pinter wrote and delivered a stunning, powerful speech, and the Nobel Prize Committee has kept it available. I thank you, one and all. Illegitimate non-carborundum. Remember that war is not healthy for children and other living things. And please come back again next week. Ciao.